Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Oh, what a great way to open up the 5 o'clock hour. Not only with the music of the Mavericks that Sue and I both love, but let's go up to Detroit. That's where Senator Eric Schmidt is with President Trump and J.D. Vance. And I think Trump's on stage right now. Are you backstage? Is that what I understand? Let's see if he's there. Are you there? There he is. Oh, there he is. You there? How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
No, I am backstage. I figured we better connect now because this motorcade is going to get moving here soon. So we're here.
Yeah, you're with me until they say, okay, you're going to Wisconsin with us, right?
That's right, yeah. So we'll leave here and head to Wisconsin for a rally tonight. I was with them last night in Arizona with the Tucker Carlson event. I was with J.D. Vance earlier in the week, had cruise earlier in the week. I'll be in Ohio on Sunday, a statewide flyer on Monday, so busy week, but getting to spend some time with the president. He's energized. These crowds are energized. It's been a lot of fun today.
All right, so what would you say? I mean, the Tucker Carlson event turned into another story here for our friends in the legacy media, just completely misrepresenting what he said, including Liz Cheney. What is wrong with Liz Cheney? Good Lord.
It's a total joke. I mean, look, they're still smarting from the fact that the president of the United States, Joe Biden, referred to half of America as garbage, and she keeps calling people fascists. They have nothing left at name-calling. And so, honestly, I will tell you that I spoke to this crowd. These are hardworking folks that come to these things. They want a better life for their kids. President Trump offers a change in direction from the disaster that's been the last 4 years. So I feel really good about where we're at right now, Mark. And Robert Kennedy Jr. is with us today. We were on the plane coming from Arizona with him. And he's
nice.
Fully integrated into this campaign now. It's fun.
The garbage truck moment. We have to address the garbage truck moment. I mean, just when you thought nothing could outdo the McDonald's visit. Our favorite part, and I think the country's favorite part, had to be when he wore the vest on stage at Green Bay when that was happening.
That was great. It was great. I was telling him on the plane today that there are a lot of people in St. Louis and in Missouri that were wearing that, you know, those outfits for
Halloween.
For Halloween. They were either the garbage bag or the orange or yellow vest. So it's a craze.
So are you going to Pennsylvania this weekend as well?
No. So I was in Pennsylvania with J.D. earlier, and then I'm doing this today, and then I'll be coming back to St. Louis tomorrow and then flying to Ohio Sunday. So this swing today will be my last time on the presidential side. Then I'll do a Senate one, on Sunday in Ohio, which is a must-win, and then coming back and do a statewide fly-around for all the folks who are up on our, you know, in Missouri.
So, you know, I think there might even be a willingness on the part of some of the people on the left to admit that momentum has swung in the former president's direction. Now, this thing is not over. I'm guessing the focus is still on getting people out to vote, Eric.
That's right. And that's the message that I deliver, that President Trump's delivering, is, look, our early voting numbers are up. That's good. Now, I don't think they're just cannibalizing Election Day numbers. I do think we're seeing an increase in turnout, but we have to keep the pedal to the metal here. The energy is there. The polling is there. All of those things. But the only poll that really matters is on Election Day. And so people need to vote. We're telling people, make sure when you leave here, text four friends. Make sure you get somebody to the polls. Because here's the thing, Mark. It's a good thing that we have a larger base now. We have a broader party. It's a multi-ethnic working class party. But that includes more people. Like, think of the people who are listening to podcasts. They're not traditional voters. They're not voting in every election. So we have more of those kinds of voters in the fold, which is a good thing, but we got to make sure they actually show up and vote, right? And so that's what the focus is now for the next few days.
So I have not listened to JD. I listened to the entire 3-hour podcast with President Trump and Joe Rogan. I was heading back from seeing my grandson in Houston. I got to check out JD because I heard that was excellent too.
Yeah, he's great. I was with him, actually. We met up in Austin because I finished my thing with Cruz in Texas. And so right after he did the Rogan podcast, he hopped on the plane and we talked about it. He had a great time. I listened to pieces of it, not the whole thing yet. The reason why JD was a great pick, I knew because we're close. More people are seeing that now, right? He's just a regular guy. He's a smart guy. He communicates well. And I think that more of those podcasts and reaching different people who aren't watching, the mainstream media at the 5 o'clock news is really important. I think Trump and Vance are both doing a very good job of that, and that's the future.
Yeah, my favorite part of doing what I do is promoting other people's podcasts. There's no doubt about it. That's where my career is right now. Listen, you got to get on a bus and head over to Wisconsin. Thank you so much for jumping on here, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few days.
It will. Thanks for having me on, and make sure everybody get out and vote. Yep, see ya.
Thank you very much. That's Senator Eric Schmidt, who, by the way, had his humble beginnings as the official state senator of the Mark Reardon Show. So I don't know if you know that.
But
go way back to when he first ran for state senate. And what he's another one, not unlike Jennings, a little different category here, where, you get to a certain level with stardom, with superstardom.
Yep.
And it's not like Eric doesn't want to still hang with the people that, he used to, but it's a different world. And he's in a different universe flying on a plane right now with
backstage.
J.D. Vance and President Trump. Right.
Yeah.
Now the question becomes, does he get invited? We've talked about this a little bit. Does he get invited to be part of any administration, this Trump administration? There's a chance, but the guy's got 4 more years left in the Senate. He was only elected 2 years ago, so that's something to keep in mind. All right, we have John Lamping, who was nice enough to hang around, is going to join us here to talk some politics in a moment. But also, I want to mention Aaron Moriarty. Aaron is the host of 48 Hours on CBS. They came in multiple times over the summer to interview a bunch of people connected with my friend Chris Smith. Chris was shot in the head. The woman that he was with, Leslie Reeves, killed in Farmersville, Illinois, 3 years ago this Thanksgiving. It was the night before Thanksgiving. The story is really amazing. Chris survived, and his recovery story is part of what 48 Hours is going to focus in on. And Aaron will give us a preview coming up here in just a little bit. And that episode will air. It's called Fatal First Date. It's going to air tomorrow night on 48 Hours, and that airs on KMOV at 9 p.m. Central Time tomorrow night. Former Senator John Lamping, who was with us on the roundtable, been nice enough to kind of hang out here and talk some politics. How are you again, John?
I'm doing great. I'm still not quite sure if I've gotten over that roundtable. It was kind of feisty today.
Well, thanks to you, I think. And they're going to be feisty. And let's talk a little bit about this election. But first, let's talk about Tuesday night, because we've done the last two presidential races, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. I think the first time I was in the studio with you on any election night was 2014, because I ran in 2010. And I was out of office. I wasn't running again. So 14, we started. I think it came Wex days, and it's really every time since then.
I can't believe. So it's 2010 when you ran, and that's when I got to know you.
Yeah.
Which was, that was a great time. Well, look, you've been a great contributor and a great friend. John and I go to a lot of concerts together. He's my concert date. We went to ELO recently, which was fantastic. Every once in a while, we'll see some bands at the Pageant or the Old Rock House. So that's been a fun part of our relationship. But really, it's kind of about politics. Now, let me go back to 2016, because since John and I know each other, we can kind of debate back and forth, and we don't always agree, but we have, I think, a mutual respect. So you kept telling me in 2016, Trump's going to win. And I said, and it was based on the electoral path. Okay. I thought, I don't see the path where Trump can get enough electoral votes to win the election. Of course, then we're all in the studio. We're there with Mike Kelly and John Hancock.
That was a great day.
Oh, my God. And I'm sitting there at my mic spot on the KMOX side of the building in the studio, and I'm watching that New York Times thing, John. Remember that little needle thing?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And, 85% chance that Hillary's going to win. 80% chance. 75%. I can still see Hancock and Kelly's eyes. If we're being honest, all of our eyes were like, is this really happening?
Yeah, I remember Kelly dropped his head, and I said, well, what's going on? And he dropped his head because he got the turnout numbers in the city of St. Louis, and they were so far down that it was just an indication that something was off on his party. And obviously a great night. And that was interesting, too, because that was essentially, it was called pretty early.
But what were you seeing? What were the undercurrents that you were seeing? Was it mainly, because we're spending some time this hour talking about my friend Chris Smith and the way that I developed the relationship with Chris. That story will be on 48 Hours tomorrow night. As Johnny would call my show, and, I made the ill-fated wager with him, but he kept saying, Mark, you're not seeing what I'm seeing in rural parts of Illinois with working class people. I had, Kelly, to his credit, he saw it with some union members, right?
Yeah.
But what were you seeing?
Well, first of all, through alternative media, I was, what we now know as a Trump rally, that's what's happening all across the country and all the key states. It was happening for weeks and weeks and weeks leading up to the election. It was not being covered by anybody. Nobody was covering the Trump elections. And I was, you know, you're hearing people are parking their car, they're walking a mile to get there, because now it's very well organized and they get
buses
covered.
And all this stuff, right?
But it was like grassroots, pure grassroots. So that was the big part of it. I knew that blue collar people were turning that way. I was in a grocery store maybe a week before the election, and two guys were standing in line next to me, and these people look like, I mean, these guys look like they were not sophisticated political analyst, and they were talking about the election. They were talking about Trump. They were talking about, one guy said, "I'm voting for the first time." And that's when I knew that there was something there. And secondly, I mean, Hillary was a much better candidate than Kamala is now. But Hillary, it was so disliked.
Likability factor was huge. Look, you know, the one story I always kind of share, too, from 2016, this was right, I think it was the end of February, it was before Super Tuesday. I'm in line, probably going to Las Vegas, John, because that's where I go, as you know. And I'm in the Southwest queue, and we're all lined up. I think I was in the A boarding group, right? And we're all waiting to get on the plane, and there was a TV, and the TV was showing Marco Rubio. Little Marco at the time, he was known for. And who else? Who the hell was still in that race before Super Tuesday? Ted Cruz, right?
Jeb Bush.
So they're on the screen, right? Everyone, what do you people do when you're in the line, a queue, you're looking at your phone, mm-hmm. right? You're kind of looking around, you're waiting to board. Trump comes on the TV. Every head in that line, John, maybe that's a slight exaggeration, but I'm telling you, it was noticeable. People's heads went up. Now, a lot of that people that don't like him, they can't help but watch him because they're kind of obsessed with him. But the reason I bring all this up, because Selena Zito, who was on the show even this week, and she's great. She wrote a book about 2016 called The Great Revolt. She saw the undercurrents, mm-hmm. too.
Yes, she's great.
She said, and I think you might agree, that this feels a lot like 2016. Now, what I would say is this. I didn't vote for, you know this, I didn't vote mm-hmm. for Trump in 2016. Sure. I just voted for a friend of mine in Wisconsin. I wrote his name in. I did vote for him in 2020. But I feel, this is anecdotal, I know people hate him, John. I know women hate him. But there's more people maybe that didn't support him the last two times that I think will enthusiastically this time.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, when do you get a chance to see what 4 years Trump looks like, and you know, and then 4 years of what the opponent looks like? And it's an unmitigated disaster what is the last, you know, 3.5-4 years. And people are looking for change. Heck, even Kamala's campaigning for change.
That's true.
Awesome.
That is true.
But you know, here we are the Friday before, and as a supporter of Trump and somebody who's rooting him on, he's run a phenomenal campaign. He's really done an amazing job. He himself, I mean, there's gaffes, there's things that he says and how he says them. But if you had told me that Trump would behave the way he behaved the last 4 months leading up to this thing, I would be thrilled. And then secondly, there's this, I think what people are completely underestimating, and we talked about this before, you and I privately, where like Trump's kind of like Captain America, but then there's these four people around him that are the Avengers, you know? And that's JD, and that's RFK, and Tulsi, and that's Elon. And those are his surrogates. And individually, those guys are packing halls. When they go out, it doesn't have to be Trump. They can, JD can pack a hall. Elon can pack a hall. And I think when all is said and done and Trump's successful, I think a lot will be written about who those four people are and what they meant to the success of the campaign.
So let me just, and I'm feeling pretty good about the way things are trending, but let me throw a little cold water, just get reaction. I'm looking at these Senate races right now, too. And I'm looking at all the polling, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, the Democrats all lead in the averages. There's some late polling that's showing good things in the swing states. But for the most part, if you look at the patterns, I'm seeing a lot of blue in those states. The Democrats lead, even in Nevada and Arizona. The only momentum is really favoring a Republican in maybe in Pennsylvania, which might be the only state that matters. But just your reaction to that, because you can argue that if Trump wins, you know, Nevada in particular, maybe even Wisconsin, he's going to drag Eric Hovde in Wisconsin across the line with him. Now, sometimes we split these votes, too. So what are your thoughts there on the Senate makeup and what might happen related to that with the presidential race?
Well, it's such a favorable map for the Republicans this time around that, I mean, 51 Republicans will be a bad night for the Republicans. 52 seems very doable. I mean, you're forgetting about, you know, Sherrod Brown in Ohio, which is a red state, and he's the incumbent. What you're speaking of in all these races is that all the Democrats are incumbents, and it's really hard to beat an incumbent. So it looks
except for John Tester, apparently, because that's the right one in Montana that's not close.
Yeah, he's done, and same thing West Virginia we're picking up.
Yeah, that's a Republican pickup.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's two. That's plus two. So like I said, 51's a bad night. I think 52, and
if you could pick off even one of those other ones, right? And if you get two, and the White House.
Well, it's funny. There's not going to be a lot of drama in the Senate. Like I said, I think it's minimum 51's a bad night. It could be four or five. Some of these races are really neck and neck, and especially in the swing states. And if it's a bigger night than we think, the House is where it's interesting. If Trump does not get the House, then there's this long, horrible, twisted tale about whether or not the Democratic House actually accepts election results. You know, we won't go there, but they might.
Right, that's
and
true.
We won't go there today. And then as far as legislatively, you know, what can you get done the first 2 years if you have split government, which you will have split government? And then in the midterms, it swings back over to the Democrats. They have a very good midterm map as far as picking up seats. So it's important that we get 53 or more, if we could, in the Senate and somehow win the House. The House is going to be, if we have a majority, it'll be about the same size as it is now, maybe even narrower.
I have a friend of mine that grew up with this guy in suburban Chicago, and we still keep in touch. We're still friends. And he's always kind of my bellwether guy, John, because
I know this guy.
He's literally voted for, you know, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Obama. He likes the winners, and I checked in with him yesterday. Now, he's in Illinois, so it really doesn't matter. It's moot. But he said, Tuesday I'll vote for Kamala Harris. I'm not impressed with her or her running mate. I don't know how you could be, but there's no way I can vote for Donald Trump. January 6th is the main reason. Other reason, his campaign didn't present anything that makes me see him as a better choice. I would disagree with that one, but I brought it up because of January 6th. Despite the enthusiasm that we have, and a lot of Trump supporters have right now, and I do think that it's not manipulated. It's real going into Election Day. The fact of the matter is there's still a lot of people that hate this guy. Women, this may come down to women versus men, John, because we see the numbers. I think there's a lot of folks around here that are having votes canceled out. Men are voting one way. Mm-hmm. Women are voting the other way.
Well, I think that's all very real. Women are going to vote 54-55%, especially white women are going to vote for him in an overwhelming way. Married women vote for Trump. But that's just, I mean, that's the way we are. That's the way the electorate is. I mean, there's everyone that's not voting for Trump has a reason. A lot of them, it's January 6th. A lot of them, it's abortion. A lot of them, it's just character. Some of them, it's democracy.
I heard one girl on Fox this morning, you know, they were doing like a little, cafe. They'd been going out and interviewing people. And the one girl was, definitively saying that, no, I can't vote for Trump because he's going to take away my birth control, because this Project 2025 crap that's out there, you know, that was their boogeyman. They kept lying about all these things.
Well, I mean, to women, abortion is birth control, Mark, and they think that somehow, some way, he's gonna pass a national abortion ban.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, that's where the culture is where it is, and all this, it's so dishonest. Can you imagine if the Amendment 3 was simply, does a woman have the right to kill her baby in the womb? If that was the wording, because that's what it is, that's what abortion is. That side can't use that language. That side has to say it's about choice. It's about women's health, reproductive choices. And they don't want to say it's birth control, but the people who fall back on abortion use it as birth control, and that's what it is. And so, you know, like I said, everybody is not voting for Trump. They've got reasons why, and that's a big one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Around the country.
Former Senator John Lamping. Okay, we talked about this on the roundtable just quickly on the Missouri stuff right now. Predictions on Amendment 2, Amendment 3. What are your thoughts?
I think three passes narrowly, sadly. I'm praying for a miracle. I think seven passes, that's no ranked choice voting. All the statewides will all be Republicans.
Is it true that St. Louis is not included in the no ranked choice voting? That I saw some reference to that, which would suck. The city of St.
Louis.
Yeah,
not that I'm aware, no.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, that one's going to pass. Then the Lake of the Ozarks gambling boat's probably going to pass as well.
Yeah, that'll probably pass. Keogh's out, you know, working it pretty hard, and you know, there's not a reason not to vote for it.
It's been a weird cycle for me in Missouri, because usually we have, you know, I was telling Becky this, John, you might remember this. No, this was before you knew me. In 2008, 3 weeks before the election, John McCain called me live on the air when I was on KMOX. The reason that happened, not because of me, it's because Missouri was a purple state at that time. And we kind of mattered in the whole, you know, scheme of, you know, the battleground states. We were a battleground state.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens if Amendment 3 does pass and it stays that way for a long enough period of time. You could have a lot of changes occur within the Republican Party. You know, suddenly, like, we already have the guy who's going to be the speaker starting in January has already come out and said, look, if Amendment 3 passes, we have to respect the will of the people, which is pretty far from where people like Mary Elizabeth Coleman are in the Senate, who are going to do everything they can to get that back on the ballot and to get abortion out of Missouri again as soon as she can. So when things like that, some really linchpin foundational things in our ideology are pushed away and changed, then who knows where the change is going to end up?
John Lamping, I can't wait for Tuesday night. We're almost here, although, again, I think you even texted me something to this effect. We may have to do a couple of weeks on the air to get a
sounds
final
that way.
Tally.
I heard a live interview after that, I texted that to you, that from the Secretary of State of Atlanta said they will have the vote by 10 or 11 o'clock on
Well, let's hope that's the case.
Yeah.
We'll see you Tuesday night. Thank you.
Take care.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
St. Louis is home for conservative talk.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
Well, many of you know the story of Chris Smith, and let me kind of just shorten it here. This guy used to call my radio show when I was on KMOX, and we called him Chris in the Country, and he would just bug the living crap out of me. He'd call, and then he'd tell me Trump's going to win. A month before the election, I said, Trump's not going to win. This is in 2016, obviously. Come on, Chris. Trump's not going to win. I said, I'm so smart. I'm a talk show host. I'm smarter than everyone, right? If Trump wins, you can shave my head. Well, Trump did. He won. And Chris called me the next day. He was a regular calling the show. And he said, dude, you don't have to shave your head. And I said, how about we go to a Cardinals game? And people still hate me to this day for that. And they should. You should, ladies and gentlemen. But Chris and I became friends. We really did. We started hanging out. I got to know him pretty well. He was going on some tough times 3 years ago, right before Thanksgiving. He had gone through a divorce, and he wasn't in the best place. But then something even worse happened. He went on a date with this woman named Leslie Reeves, and they were both shot in Chris's home on the night before Thanksgiving 3 years ago. And now 48 Hours is doing a story about all this. It'll air tomorrow night.
So you are the lead crime scene investigator?
Yes.
Were you really prepared for what you faced when you walked into that house?
I was not.
Why would somebody do this to him? Why would they try to hurt my baby? That's all I kept thinking. He's my baby. Someone hurt him.
Going on a first date and they both end up getting shot is insane.
Well, many of you in my audience are familiar with this story, and we had Chris Smith on yesterday to share some things about what's going to happen on 48 Hours tomorrow night. And Aaron Moriarty, who is doing the story for 48 Hours, is with us this afternoon to tell us all about the episode Fatal First Date. Aaron, how are you?
I'm good, and I'm glad we're finally getting this report on the air, because we've worked on it for so long, argued about it for so long. It's time, finally.
Well, and I know Chris is certainly ready. And, you know, one of the goals that he had, and I don't really think I helped here with getting this on your radar, but I was trying to get it on people's radar because he always felt like this was such a great story. Not what happened, obviously, almost 3 years ago, but as you know, his recovery and his, you know, unwillingness to let his life be over because he's just trying to get it back to the way it used to be.
Well, and we made sure, and he was actually concerned. There's one time when I'm interviewing him that he turns to the camera and he goes, if there are any doctors out there who have any kind of treatment, I will be your guinea pig.
Right.
Well, that's in our hour. So I'm hoping that when this airs, he might get a response, which would be great. Because I think it's very rare for us in 48 Hours we cover, sadly, murders, criminal trials. And it's very rare to have such an uplifting part of a story that is really so tragic. But on one hand, it's amazing to see how well he did. But the other point that we really make is how much he lost.
Yes.
That one person's act hurt so many people and really did take away the life that Chris had really valued. And that's part of this report as well.
You know, and he admitted to me, he had sent me the segment from this morning on CBS This Morning, and I watched it, and we were sharing some text messages. As I indicated, he was on the air with me yesterday to promote the segment. But he admitted, Aaron, and, you know, maybe some of us should have thought about this, that this is going to be much more difficult than he anticipated to watch all this tomorrow night.
Well, we thought it might be. We had warned him, and he told Paul LaRosa, my producer, that while he was watching, he realized he probably shouldn't be. And I don't want him to watch the show tomorrow night. I'd like to have him hear from other people or maybe hear parts. We can send him parts of the show. We can send him the parts where he's recovering and all the work he is doing to get back the old Chris Smith. I'm not sure he wants.
He won't do that. I promise you. I tried to get him, Aaron. I actually said that. I said, look, maybe this is an indication that you should kind of dial back on this because they have a bit of a watch party, but he won't do that. He wants to be with family and friends. And Chris, if there's nothing else that you will come away with tomorrow night, and I think you know this, Aaron, when he gets his mindset on something, he won't let it go.
I know, but you realize, and I think you know this, Mark. I mean, we definitely told Chris. We interview Bobby Todd.
Yeah.
Now, anyone who watches this show is going to know the jury got it right. There is no question that this man ruined so many people's lives. But there are people who feel that you should never hear from a convicted killer. I felt it really adds insight and you understand who this man was. And in a way, it really shows you this man was determined to hurt Leslie and anyone around Leslie. No question.
So, yesterday I told Chris this. There, as much, Aaron, as I know this story, and as much as I remember 3 years ago when his mom messaged me on Facebook Messenger and say, hey, is this Mark the Radio guy? Chris Smith was shot in the head. I'm like, wait a second, what? And that just, welcomed me into the saga, if you will, because Chris and I were friends. But I didn't know, for example, let me play a little clip here about Brijan, who, went to the house.
I saw the back door was broken, and then I saw Chris laying there, and then I ran back to my car and called 911.
Nobody's answering the door, and the back window's shattered, and there's a body, and there's a foot I saw on the floor. I'm only 16. I can't deal with this.
I was in shock, I think.
Sheriff's Office, Jeff.
Jeff, give me some help. I got one alive and one dead.
I just remember them bringing Chris out on the stretcher to the ambulance. I remember there being a sheet over him, so it made me panic a little bit.
Yeah, Aaron, even playing that clip, that gives me some chills, and I really did not know, how she discovered Chris and that she was 16 years old. That poor girl, she'll remember that forever.
Absolutely. I was also, I don't know if everyone knows that, Nanette, Leslie's friend, I've always been so impressed with her. She knew her friend was going to go out on a date with a guy named Chris Smith, and then when she didn't hear from her, she drove there, and she was the one who first gave the name Bobby Tarr to investigators.
Right.
They wouldn't have known. They wouldn't have zeroed in on him so quickly. There were a lot of people around Leslie and Chris who were angels, who really made a difference in this. And then, of course, when I first heard that they arrested Bobby Tarr within 24 hours, I thought, wow, that was really quick. Why the rush? Why not wait for evidence? But as the prosecutor said to me, we didn't have a weapon then. And we knew there was an armed killer out there. He could have come back and killed Chris. And so you really see why so much was done in this case. It had to have been done that way.
Did you, because the other aspect of this is really weird, and I've covered it, is that this guy puts a hit out or tries to put a hit out on Chris and the detective. I'm guessing that makes the cut for the story.
Well, yeah, because his explanation is so crazy. Does he really believe anyone's going to believe it? He actually paid this inmate, a cellie, who he had never known before, $10,000. And he tells me, oh, I paid it because I wanted to help him make bail. Come on. Does he really think anyone's going to believe that?
I guess. Aaron Moriarty from 48 Hours is here. The episode tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Central. It's called Fatal First Date. Aaron, explain a little bit, and you guys were nice enough to interview me, and I think I make a small appearance, but one of the things that is a challenge for 48 Hours, and you guys execute this so exceptionally, and people love the true crime, is there's a challenge in telling this story without giving too much up to begin with, right?
Well, yes, but I don't know if we want to tell the story really the way investigators saw it, friends saw it. so you have a better understanding of how the investigation went. I don't know if we're really trying to keep information away, but it's we do care about our storytelling.
Yeah, of course.
And you do want to pull people in and have them really understand what happened. And you do make a real appearance in our show. And I felt it was important because you give a sense of who Chris was before. I mean, of course, we hear from his mother and his sister. But I think you capture who Chris was with that amazing personality and sense of humor, unlike anyone else. I still don't know quite how he grew and probably will still try to grow banana trees in Illinois, but that would be a mystery.
And the giant pumpkins. Oh, man. You know, I used to call him Pumpkin Boy. That was one of the nicknames I had for him because of his giant pumpkins. The other thing that I you know, kind of stuck out from this morning is, you know, and I've shared this with the audience. Chris has told this, Aaron, you told the folks on the set, Tony and everyone this morning. He doesn't remember even meeting Leslie Reeves. He doesn't remember any of this.
I believe that.
I know.
You know, and he did have, before any of this happened, he was texting with her. He was emailing. They spent an evening together that, by all accounts of people who saw them in the bar, you know, they were having a great time. They were about to have pizza. We know that because of what was left in the
burned pizza,
oven,
right.
I know, isn't that kind of one of those details that just kind of hits you in the gut?
And I didn't know that one either. And that was interesting when I watched the preview.
Yeah, it's just such a normal kind of activity. They were about to have pizza. They had a great night. The fact he doesn't remember any of that, I don't know whether that is, you know, you always hear that your brain protects you from a terrible event. We know it was. We don't know exactly what happened because Bobby Tarr does not tell the truth. And sadly, Chris doesn't remember, and Leslie's not here to tell
us. I think it might be good, though, to your point, that he doesn't remember, right?
Because it had to be terrifying.
Right.
We know there was enough time that Leslie was trying to move a big refrigerator to the door. There had to be time that they knew what was going on and they couldn't prevent it. And Leslie, it's really sad because the prosecutor believes that not only did Bobby Tarr shoot her, but she was on her knees when he shot her.
Oh,
who does something like that? And that's a detail that I think will haunt me forever because what an act of cruelty. And, you know, can I just make a point? Because I think it's important for anybody who's angry at a ex-boyfriend or girlfriend. This man had a chance to change his mind. The evidence shows that he went and saw where she was at Christmas house. Then he went back home. He had time to change his mind. He could have changed his mind. He didn't. He should have.
And all the lives that has affected. And you'll see the story, Fatal First Date on 48 Hours. It airs, of course, on KMOV here locally at 9 o'clock tomorrow. And does this stream then, Aaron, on Paramount Plus? Is that accurate?
Yes, it does.
Good.
Yes, it does.
Excellent. I subscribe to every damn streaming service out there, but that's good to know. Hey, thank you, Aaron, so much for jumping on here with us this evening on 97.1 FM Talk. I really appreciate it.
And thanks for talking to us about Chris. And you will see yourself tomorrow night. And I hope all your listeners watch as well.
Can't wait. Thank you, Aaron.
All right. Thanks so much, Mark.
Ain't got no regrets. I ain't losing track of which way I'm going.
I always have to let Lou sing a little on this one, right?
Yeah.
Even though you said he didn't sound very good at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but
I don't know.
He sounds great on this song for sure. All right, well, we have one more segment to go. Sue, do you have big weekend plans or not?
Let me think about that. I must not be, since I can't think of
I'll
anything.
Take that as a no.
Yeah.
Look, I really do have to do the work around my house tomorrow, so I'll be doing that and watching a little football and listening to music and gearing up for this election because I said this yesterday, it's kind of like a kid in a candy store or it's like Christmas. No matter what happens next week, I get revved up about this. I can't wait for election night. It's going to be a blast either way.
Hey, I did an interview for History of the Lou with Sue that will air this weekend. 1 o'clock on KMOX tomorrow, and then 6 a.m., I think, 97.1 on Sunday. Anyway, it's kind of a preview of Veterans Day. So we talk about the Ghost Army exhibit at the Soldiers Memorial,
oh, nice.
And it is fascinating. So, yeah.
And piggybacking off of that, Sue, I actually traded out a day. We all are supposed to have off for a company holiday on Veterans Day. I agreed to work on Veterans Day with Ethan because I was off on Monday for my trip to Houston.
Right, it's a trade.
But I want to feature something on that Monday. You and I have talked about this.
Yes.
On that exhibit.
And we'll have Mark come over. I think he'll
yeah.
love it.
And Mayor Mike, by the way, in
yeah.
Grafton, we're going to
yep.
get him. So we're going to do some fun stuff on that day for sure. Let's do this before we get out of here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I would encourage you to go back and listen to the Reardon Roundtable. We talked about this quite a bit, but here is the latest media malfeasance. This is what President Trump said with Tucker Carlson last night. Nothing of the sort that was being represented on CNN and elsewhere.
I think he's right with so much of the things he's talking about.
Hang on, that was the RFK jersey. See, I screwed this up. I had this plan, but I did not have the right cut.
Take two.
So, yeah, I know. Take two is right.
She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face. You know, they're all war hawks when they're sitting in Washington in a nice building saying, oh, gee, Will, let's send... Let's send 10,000 troops right into the mouth of the enemy. But she's a stupid person.
She is a stupid person for no other reason that she made this into something and misrepresented what he said, because he was very clearly depicting Liz Cheney as deployed to war because she likes sending people into war with her own weapon. And that's the scenario that he was painting. Of course, this is what CNN said about all this stuff.
I don't think you even need to call it fired upon. He's saying quite explicitly and unambiguously that Liz Cheney should be shot, should be executed by firing squad.
4 days out from Election Day, and former President Donald Trump is escalating his violent rhetoric, suggesting one of his most prominent critics, the former Congresswoman Liz Cheney, should be fired upon.
It's just so dumb. They lie. This is the one reason, well, there's many reasons to save the country that I so hope that this is a big victory, not just a victory, but a big victory for President Trump next week. Now, along the media malfeasance line, they were doing this video thing with the Washington Post, Jonathan Capehart, Ruth Marcus, and Hugh Hewitt, conservative talk show hosts. And they're making the case, Jonathan Capehart and Ruth Marcus, that in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, where there's been an election challenge on the part of the Trump campaign, by the way, that was successful, that he's just, you know, trying to stir up controversy. So they're painting a conspiracy theory about Bucks County, Pennsylvania and the vote. And Hugh Hewitt says this.
Well, I've just got to say, we're news people, even though we're at the opinion section. It's got to be reported. Bucks County was reversed by the court and instructed to open up extra days because they violated the law and told people to go home. So that lawsuit was brought by the Republican National Committee, and it was successful. The Supreme Court ruled that Glenn Youngkin was successful. We are news people, even though we have opinions, and we have to report the whole story if we bring up part of the story. So, yes, he's upset about Bucks County, but he was right, and he won in court. That's the story.
That is the story. So, Jonathan Capehart, there's unusual silence here. They don't know how to respond, and then this happens after a little silence with Capehart on the video stream.
I'll let you keep going, Jonathan.
No, I don't appreciate being lectured about reporting when you, many times you come here saying lots of things that aren't
based in fact. I won't
come
back, Jonathan. I'm done. This is the most unfair election ad I have ever been a part of. You guys are working. That's fine. I'm done.
He walked off. He said that was it.
So, Ruth, you wrote...
And he tries to go on with the conversation, and then Ruth Marcus's feed cuts off. But Hugh Hewitt also did a weekly column for the Washington Post. You know what's interesting about his message there to two Washington Post people who apparently did not read Jeff Bezos's op-ed? Because what he wrote in the op-ed is exactly what they were doing there. Exactly. And Hugh Hewitt finally said, I've had enough. We're not doing this anymore. And good for him for doing that. So he quit his column at the Washington Post as well. That was an interesting moment.
Wow.
That's why it's audio cut of the day. Sue, have a great weekend.
You too.
On Monday, we'll be down to just 24 hours before the election. I can't wait. Have a great weekend.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.